taught you how to love. It's not like you ever took a class in it, so your idea of how to make a relationship work most likely comes from your parents, or the movies, or pop songs. These are not necessarily ideal educational resources, so most of us could use a little additional help. In the new book, 8 Rules of Love, How to Find It, Keep It, and Let It Go, Jay Shetty draws on both ancient wisdom and modern science to offer practical advice for every aspect of your romantic life. Jay is a former monk, a popular podcaster, and a best-selling author, and he joins us now to share 5 of his big ideas.
Hey everyone, it's Jay Shetty. I'm the number one New York Times best-selling author of Think Like a Monk, Chief Purpose Officer at Calm, and the podcast host of the number one health and wellness podcast, On Purpose. My new book, 8 Rules of Love, will be available on January 31st, and today I'm going to share with you 5 of the key insights from the book. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so grateful for your time and energy. So it might be counterintuitive, but rule 1 in my book about relationships and love is let yourself be alone. Now, a lot of studies and research has gone into why being alone and being confident being single is not only better for you, but it's actually better for you and your partner when you enter a relationship. Professor and clinical psychologist Bella DiPaolo says it's a broad misconception that single people are to blame for the high levels of loneliness we're reporting internationally. In fact, studies show that overall, the longer people are single in life, the happier they become. Researchers from the German Center of Gerontology analyzed data from more than 2,500 participants in the German Aging Survey. They found that as time went on, people became happier with their single status, and whether or not they were in a relationship became less relevant to them. DiPaolo writes that over time, historically, single life gets better and better. And for individuals as they age, satisfaction with their single lives gets even better too. This is the part where it gets really fascinating. DiPaolo points to research that when asked to predict their levels of happiness, should they stay single, college students thought that over the next 5 years, they'd experience roughly a 3 out of 10 on the happiness scale. Conversely, if they got married, they imagined they'd be just above an 8. In reality, though, the average happiness rating of single people was just above a 7 and climbing over the years. And as DiPaolo says, one of our challenges culturally is that we don't tell positive, affirming stories about people who are single. And that's so true, right? Whether you look at movies, whether you look at music, whether you look at TV shows, usually, even though people in relationships are struggling, it's really highlighted when someone's alone. And in the book, I share with you ideas, exercises, reflections, journals as to what to do when you are spending time alone, as to how to really get to know yourself and use it for self-awareness. Principle 2. What's really interesting is that if you've ever spoken to one of your friends or family members who's dating right now, and I literally had a conversation with my friend the other day at brunch, and his response was, I've been going on lots of dates recently, but I'm not feeling any spark. I'm not feeling any chemistry. Now, we're addicted to this idea of feeling a spark or chemistry. And of course, it's healthy to be attracted to the person that we want to spend our lives with, or at least some of our life with. And we're all chasing this intangible, ethereal feeling. And studies say that when we're young and our prefrontal cortex is not fully developed, we think with our feelings instead of reason and self-control. And so it's natural when we're young to feel more spark, to feel more chemistry. Do you remember being 16? Do you remember having your first crush, however old you were when you had that? I remember having my first crush at like 14, like a proper relationship. And when I think back to that, it was so much more easier to feel the spark and chemistry early on in life than when you're older, because our prefrontal cortex has developed, which means that all of our reasoning power, our self-control, our discipline, our ability to be more discerning has all been strengthened. Now, one of the problems with overemphasizing chemistry is that it doesn't take character into account. Our character traits, such as our interest and values, are far more what will make a relationship continue. Chemistry starts relationships, compatibility keeps them going, and character makes them last. Let me say that again. Chemistry starts a relationship, compatibility keeps it going, and character protects the relationship when things are falling apart. And so when you are dating, when you are getting to know someone, yes, of course, you're looking for that inner spark in that moment, but it's their character that will keep that relationship intact. And often we don't really know the character of our partner. We know their personality, but their character is different. Let me show you, or let me explain to you. Their character is how they behave when they're stressed, when they're fatigued, and when they're in a bad mood. That shows the character of your partner that comes out, what's squeezed out when they're in a tough moment. Now, I'll be honest with you. For years, when I was tired or fatigued or exhausted or stressed, I could be snappy, I could be irritable. Now, would I say those things are my character? No, I wouldn't say that. But I would say that it shows you what they still have to work on. Often when you just see someone's personality, you see what you like. But when you see someone's character, you see the more difficult, challenging parts of them. Now, we all have those, right? It's not something that we're hiding. It's not something that we're pretending we don't have. We all have those. And I think it's so healthy and so important to see your partner in multiple different interactions over time before you've gone too far in. And so in the book, I talk about, while biology makes a very real impact on things such as attraction, our longer-term compatibility is also heavily influenced by our character. And that's something we learn about one another over time. And studies show that you need around 40 hours to consider someone a casual friend, 100 hours to consider someone a good friend, and 200 hours to consider someone a great friend. If you've not spent 200 quality hours with someone, please don't say I love you. Don't expect to hear I love you back. If you hear it, think about it, reflect on it, slow it down. It's 200 quality hours, not just in a cinema, not just on your phones, right? It's actually being present with each other. In the book, I break down the three aspects of how to know your personality, how to ask questions to understand your partner's values, and thirdly, to understand their goals, and exercises on how to understand your own. I can't wait for you to try them. Okay, point number three. This one's a big one. Relationships don't end because love ends. They end because patience ends, kindness ends, understanding ends. A lot of people say we just don't love each other anymore. We've fallen out of love. And what we realize is that love wasn't enough. There were all these character traits that we needed that we didn't discover or that we didn't recognize we needed to build together. And the Gottman Institute, which I believe publishes some incredible studies on relationship, talked about how the number one thing that keeps couples together is not date nights, it's not holiday cruises, it's not walks on the beach. It's actually our ability to learn how to argue. How do we turn an argument and a fight into a discussion or a debate instead? I think so many of us are arguing and fighting, and that always makes us feel drained. But if we can learn how to discuss and debate, which is more of a skill and an art, it actually can bring us closer together. And I think a lot of people think that fighting and arguing pushes you away. Well, discussion and debate brings you closer. And often we think the opposite of fighting and arguing is not fighting. So we avoid it. We avoid conflict. We try and, you know, pivot around it. We try and not bring things up. And then all of a sudden it piles up. And then weeks later we erupt and explode with so much to say. And I really, really feel that it's time in those moments to just think about how we can learn this skill. So in the book, I give you a questionnaire which helps you understand which fight style you have. Now, there are three key fight styles. I call them venting, hiding, and exploding. Venting is when you say, I want to talk about it right now. Hiding is, I don't want to talk about it, give me some space. And exploding is, I want to talk about how I feel, right? Now, none of these are good or bad. None of these are better or worse. When you understand your partner's fight style, you learn how to respond. One of the biggest issues we have in fighting is we don't like how our partner fights, right? Now, I'm not telling you you're going to like it or that it's okay, but I want you to know how they fight so that it's not a surprise every time. If every time you fight, your partner walks out the room and needs some space, you don't get mad and angry at that. You understand that's what they need. Let me give you my personal example. So Radhi and I have different fight styles. I'm a venter, she's a hider. I want to talk about it right now. I want to solve it right now. And if she walked out of the room in the beginning of our relationship, I would think that she doesn't care as much as me. She doesn't want to figure this out. And when I got to know her better, I realized that she does care, and that's why she wants space. And that's why she would go and hide and take her time. So we found out that I want to talk about it now. She wants to talk about it in 2 days. So we're going to talk about it in 12 hours to 24 hours. We're going to set a time. And this is one of the best things I've learned about arguing, is that most of us argue when we've let things build up, right? You don't argue when it's the first time. You argue when it's the third or fourth time. And if after the first or second time, instead of holding it in, if you just scheduled a time to have a healthy conversation about something, you could potentially avoid those full-blown arguments. And that's what I'd encourage you to do here, is that you don't want to have those full-blown arguments when you don't need to. So check out the fight styles inside the book, figure out yours and your partner's, and I promise you that the questions inside will guide you towards having healthier conversations, debates, and discussions and disagreements, but not arguments and fights. Point number 4 is about intimacy. Now, this is really interesting because oxytocin is related to feelings of being in love. And when we have sex, for men, these spike about 500%. And for men and women, we feel closer chemically during and after sex, but we're not actually closer emotionally. And this, I think, is something everyone's experienced. Everyone's experienced, or most people have at least had some experience of being in an unhealthy relationship where you're arguing, where it's a bit toxic, where maybe when you were younger, it was just very unclear, not transparent, but the sex and the physical connection was incredible, right? You've been in that way around where emotionally you feel distant, but physically you feel close. And what's really interesting here is that the hormone oxytocin, which is released at the time, has a temporary blocking effect on negative memories, which might have been a warning sign. And these fade after sex because of the chemical. So the hormone makes you feel safe and secure, even though you're not really. Now, this is mind-blowing to me because I know so many people that will have makeup sex, breakup sex, get back together. We use it as a crutch in a relationship because that's when we feel good, right? That's the only time that we feel safe and connected to someone. So what I'm asking people to do here is, make sure you feel safe and connected when you're not having sex, right? It's really, really important because if you're only feeling in a relationship when you're having sex, chances are that there's so much more intimacy that you're missing out on. And in the book, I give 4 different ideas of how to increase intimacy in relationships that I can't wait for you to check out, that are really powerful and will hopefully help you change how you spend time together. I think a lot of couples, especially who've been in long-term relationships, spend time together in the same way. They see their partner do the same things. And it's hard to build new excitement and curiosity when you see your partner do the same old things. Whoever's editing this, put this right at the start. My new book is called 8 Rules of Love, How to Find It, Keep It, and Let It Go. This book is truly for anyone who's at the beginning of a relationship, in the middle of it, or has just come out of a tough relationship. So if you have a friend, a family member who's going through a breakup, who just started dating, or is about to get married, or is married, give them the 8 rules of love. The 5th and final point that I want to wrap up with here, and I hope you've liked these ideas so far, is that there are more types of love than romantic love. Psychologist Tim Lomas, a lecturer in the Human Flourishing Program at Harvard University, analyzed 50 languages and identified 14 unique kinds of love. The ancient Greeks said there were 7 basic types: eros, which is sexual or passionate love; philia, which is friendship; storge, which is familial; agape, which is universal; ludus, which is casual or non-committal; pragma, which is based on duty; philotia, which is self-love. And what I realize is that we have put romantic love on such a pedestal in society that we believe that even if you have an amazing relationship with your dad, your mom, your kids, your brother, your sister, your friends, that if you don't have romantic love, you're incomplete. Now, I share in the book in the final chapter that I actually believe that you can't compare in the hierarchy of love. There are all of these beautiful bonds that we have in the world that are full of love. Could you say that the love you have for your children is less important or more important than the love you have for your partner or your own parent? Now, what I'm encouraging here is that there are so many people I know that have lost someone naturally or have been together with someone for a long time and lost them through that experience of just breaking up after many years. Does that mean that all the other love in your life is disqualified? And also what I find is that some of the most incredible things in the world, some of the most amazing sacrifices in the world, some of the greatest acts of love in the world were not between romantic love. They were a person's love for their people, a person's love for society, a person's love for humanity. And so when we see the greatest acts of love or the greatest love stories in the world, they're rarely romantic. And so I want people to break out of the idea. I want us to remember that you can experience love whenever you choose to express it. In order to truly feel love, you must give love. I want us to stop obsessing over just wanting it, wishing for it, waiting for it, and actually start giving it, sharing it. If you express love every day, I promise you, you will experience love every day. Thank you so much to the Next Big Idea Club for featuring 8 Rules of Love, How to Find It, Keep It, and Let It Go. I really hope you'll grab a copy, hardcover or audiobook if you want to hear me read it. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope this book impacts your love life and your life.
Thank you, Jay. That was Jay Shetty with 5 Big Ideas from 8 Rules of Love, How to Find It, Keep It, and Let It Go. You might also want to check out our book bite for More Than Words, The Science of Deepening Love and Connection in Any Relationship. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.